Here in Vancouver, many of us take the wilderness around us for granted, and we don't even realize how fast we're losing the remnants of our ancient forest. One pocket-sized wilderness on the Sunshine Coast is under the gun. Large-scale logging has been approved for years, and only the community's outrage and a handful of people physically blocking the road has saved this emerald oasis from clear-cut destruction. From downtown Vancouver, it's an easy bus ride to Horseshoe Bay, then a short 40-minute ferry ride to the Sunshine Coast. The view of the coast mountains from Howe Sound is awe-inspiring, jagged vertical peaks wreathed in clouds and snow. From the perspective of Tetrahedron Peak, little Mount Elphinstone might serve as a footstool. The Sunshine Coast bus winds its way from Langdale through Gibson's to Roberts Creek, stopping across from a funky cafe called the Gumboot. From there, it's only a couple kilometers hike up the country roads to the trailhead and an opportunity to get lost in paradise. The rumble of Roberts Creek and 100 gurgling tributaries is constant. This forest is saturated after a week of rain. There's a stream every 100 meters, complete with miniature waterfalls and rock pools. The dense trees and ferns are shiny and vibrant in a thousand shades of green. The forest is dark and thick, with the trunks of firs and hemlocks packed close together. Not much light reaches the forest floor. In places, it's just mulch and duff. Most of Mount Elphinstone is what we call second-growth forest, about 100 years old. A forest fire that swept through burned up most of the trees, although some of the older hemlocks were spared. I stop on the trail to examine a scarred survivor. A shadow looms black against the gloomy green. An ancient, fire-blackened Douglas fir snag stands like a monument, 10 stories tall, absolutely straight, big enough to drive a minivan through if it were hollow. But it's solid, massive, shaggy red bark crumbling to expose the bleached white spirals of its heartwood. These monster snags are scattered throughout the forest and lend it a brooding presence. I realized these firs have been dead for over 100 years, but they're just too damn stubborn to fall over. I'm here in the parking lot for the Roberts Creek Hall on the Sunshine Coast. We're about to take a tour of some proposed cut blocks on Mount Elphinstone. Paul Kruger is going to be leading this walk.
That's a provincial park, set aside, Mount Elphinstone Provincial Park. And there's this area between, I referred to this as like a Batman head or something with the two ears on either side, and the part in between is this proposed cut that they're proposing for next year.
It looks like they're putting the proposed cut right in the middle of the provincial park.
And they do appear to have designated a fringe of retention around the boundary to the provincial park, but in trying to decide which areas to, when they allotted the 150 hectares for the park, we had to sit down and decide which areas were of the highest priority.
And it was 19 veteran trees in that area that's designated possible.
When you say veteran trees, old growth trees?
Yeah. Great old Douglas fir that are fire scarred from the big fires. They survived the big fires that happened.
Over 200 or 250 years?
Over 250 years old.
Is this where we're going to go today?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We're going to go up the Roberts Creek Forest Service Road. And there's a whole series of informal to fairly formalized bicycle trails that have been designated by names, etc. And we'll follow one of those from the Roberts Creek Forest Service Road, and it will take us right down into the area designated for cutting. And we'll also be able to poke in and look at what's in the park and compare it to what's outside the park.
I'm speaking with Debbie Osler, and she's a member of the Coalition for Promotion of Environmental Concerns and a Roberts Creek resident.
a vision for this particular block of land could be part of a large, much larger community forest where there's some logging at some time, perhaps not immediately, but it also combines with mushroom harvesting and medicine harvesting, educational walks for everyone from elementary school age to seniors that are still mobile, including university students, and that would include tourist walkers and biking, and that would be probably lots of berry harvesting. There's some berries harvestable berries in here.
So these are old skid roads that were left during informal shake block harvesting that happened all through here. Mm-hmm. The fires burned through at various times, the late 1800s, early 1900s. And it sounds like there were quite a few separate events, and people would come in to cut shake blocks, and apparently it became the heyday of it, I think, was in the 70s, where a lot of jeeps were being used. Mm. There are all sorts of these little informal shake block cutting people doing their thing. Mm. And then eventually the Ministry of Logging figured out that they couldn't let it go unmanaged anymore and began to crack down on it. There used to be a sort of piracy at one time.
And now it looks like these are mountain bike trails.
Yeah, Straw Kids and other bicycle groups have been doing a lot of informal trail building. And some of them are quite conscientious and get little work parties together and make nice structures. But some of the kids will come and play and make the weirdest looking things. Quite often a bit of a mess. So.
We're seeing some flagging tape now in the trees here.
Oh yeah, I think we are just entering, we should see falling boundary. Ribbons secure. Okay. Yeah.
Those bright orange ribbons and blazes in the trees here. Yeah.
And it looks like they're using pink ribbons for wildlife trees. Let's see if there's any writing on these ribbons. Creek buffer.
There's a 30-meter creek buffer zone.
Creeks vary in topography, so if they set an arbitrary 30-meter boundary, it will be effective in some places, not in others. Mm-hmm. So there should be a standard such as measuring from the shoulder of the ravine.
In some of our areas, because the creeks are so close, like you were saying earlier, 30 meters from one creek will overlap 30 meters from the other.
Wow.
How old would you say that fir tree is?
A couple hundred years, I would imagine, at least. Yeah.
The streams that come down from these hills also are part of the water supply for the residents.
Yes, quite a few people are on creek water. Mm-hmm. There was an incident a while ago when it was discovered that there were high arsenic levels in well water, mm-hmm. So a lot of people are not fond of the idea of relying on well.
Yes, natural arsenic in the well water?
Yes, yeah, from the geology here. Mm-hmm. I was saying that there's waterfalls that exclude the salmonids, mm-hmm. from most of the creeks, but when you exclude the salmonids that way, it opens up habitat for tailed frog.
Right.
And that's why these are important creeks for tailed frog. If you have salmon coming up a creek, they eat the larval stage of the tailed frog. So when you exclude salmon through natural barriers like waterfalls, then you have habitat for tailed frog. But tailed frog like to move from creek to creek. They spend 3 years or so as tadpoles. Now when they become adults, they like to move from creek to creek. And when you have a clear cut between two creeks, the poor little guys have a heck of a time getting from one creek to another. Mm-hmm. They can't tolerate siltation.
Right.
And they can't tolerate exposure of the water to sun to warm it up. They like cold, clear mountain creeks.
Mm-hmm. And these are species of concern in BC?
Yes, the tailed frog is a very sensitive species. It's blue ranked in the Conservation Data Center system. And it used to be red listed, I believe, but it's been downgraded to blue. And they're very interesting. They stand with a Australian frog as being primordial, sort of very primitive proto-amphibian type things, so they have really neat attributes, like they actually copulate rather than do what most frogs and toads do, which is amplexes, and then they externally fertilize eggs. Mm-hmm. These tailed frogs in an Australian or New Zealand species are the only frogs that actually copulate and do internal fertilization. They also have, is that vertical pupil rather than horizontal?
Yeah, they have a vertical pupil. Most frogs have a horizontal pupil.
We have a small number of plants that are on the Conservation Data Center endangered or threatened list that are inhabitants of deep forest. Most of them are seashore, open habitats, but there's just a handful that are associated with old growth forest, and the Rubus nivalis is one of those species. It had been recognized as a threatened species, and then a few years ago we found it in cut blocks that were going to be done on Elphinstone here. Quite a populations of them. And I contacted the Conservation Data Center, brought botanists up. They checked their records and looked into the various sites where it had been reported through written history for BC, discovered that it had been lost from most of those sites. So they upgraded it to red-listed because this is one of the few strongholds of it. And somebody had spotted this. It's Rhododendron macrophyllum, mm-hmm. which or macroflorum, sorry, mm-hmm. Which is the one that Rhododendron Park in Manning Park was designated for. And they're very beautiful shrubs, but they had never been reported from the mainland coast. There'd be, well, not formally vouchered for. So we found these shrubs growing on Elphinstone and brought botanists up, collected herbarium samples, formally registered it as a population. And then when I contacted the Ministry of Logging, Ministry of Forests, they said, oh, well, it's not in danger because it's protected in parks. I said, well, that's exactly why those parks were designated, to protect the rhododendron, and they went ahead and cut, but they did leave buffers around the population of rhododendron that is here. And fortunately for us, the rhododendron can tolerate clear cutting around it. It thrives in the light. When you open it up to light, then it can actually thrive. But nevertheless, if it hadn't been pointed out to them, if an effort hadn't been made to formally recognize the population, they would have just cut over them.
Keith McKenna is a West Vancouver science teacher and a resident of Roberts Creek.
Because if they look at the economics that the area would bring, who's going to want to move to an area where it's all clear cut?
Yeah.
Right? If you're talking, like right now, a lot of people are moving here. Lots of people are moving here because there's nothing left in sort of Vancouver area that's affordable. So a lot of families are coming and choosing the Sunshine Coast. So it's going to grow and develop and change. But another reason people are choosing this area is they want the forest, they want the streams, they want the trails to walk on. If you look at 1,000 people buying houses at $400,000 a piece decide, well, we don't want to come here, that's a loss of over $4 million to a community. Right, and if this is only worth $1 million to the logging company cutting the trees down, like, it doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. You know, because that kind of dollar figure will make people think. You know, that's, you know, and then we have the animals and the wildlife as well, right?
So something that's been very frustrating for me is it's acknowledged that the mushrooms are quite an economic factor, mm-hmm. but the whole mushroom wild harvest is so secretive and informal that it's been very hard to gather data on it.
Yeah, well, no one wants to give away their spots.
Yeah, that's right. Tax-free income and all of that. And it's been very frustrating because to make a case for the value of the mushroom harvest, you have to quantify it.
But if you can put everything together into a package, so you've got the mushroom harvesting, you got the economic boom to the local communities like Roberts Creek, Gibson, Seashell, right? You get the animal and the habitat, and you get the wildlife. Put it all in a package, like you mentioned, community forest, right? And I was talking earlier, more people are apt to use the forest than a $19.1 million recreation facility over a span of 100 years. The forest will stay here. You don't have to pay people to put chlorine in the water. Right?
Yeah.
It's here, and the people will take care of the forest. People will volunteer to keep the trails updated. The mountain biking community here, the trails that they're setting up, you know, those kind of things. You put all that in a package that's worth a lot more than some timber. I drove through the Avenue of the Giants down there, the giant redwoods. There were 34 miles of highway preserved on that section. And then there are gaps between it, and then another section. I got off and walked through Lady Bird Johnson Grove, the giant redwoods. I came home and I thought, this is ridiculous. They've got all this put aside, and it's only 4% of the forest that's left, but they put that 4% away. But that 4% put Canada to shame. We have Cathedral Grove, right, which is that little pocket, right, which is, I don't know, at a couple hectares only, and they had miles and miles of preserved forest down in the States, yet they're up here logging our forests. I mean, everybody needs a job to pay their bills, to pay their rent, to live half decently, right? And the loggers need to cut trees. If that's their income, that's their work. My problem is where they're cutting trees. Mm-hmm. Now, there are areas that they could cut. I mean, certainly we can't expect all the forests in Canada to be put aside and protected.
Fair enough.
Right? But a percentage, especially around communities, I mean, green belt, if you got to think about air, water preservation, we've learned anything over the last couple hundred years is how bad we pollute the planet, then we should be creating buffer zones, green zones around communities,
yes.
You know, which keeps a healthier community.
Here's a slime mold.
This is a bright yellow thing sitting on a log.
And if you touch it, it'll dissolve into slime.
Oh.
That's the name, slime mold. They're a very unique type of organism.
You touched it.
Yeah. And then you can actually take some bright yellow slime is stuck on my fingers. Now what I can do is stick it on another log, and it'll slowly begin to crawl and move around. It'll climb up to the highest point of the log and then form its cushions and go through its spore stage. It actually moves around at quite a pace. If we were to come back here in a few hours, it would be in a different position. It would probably have climbed up there, or it may have actually just settled down at this point to do its transformation, because it's beginning to differentiate into little bumps and little structures that will eventually become dry and produce spores.
Yeah, it looks like someone has dropped a big clump of, like, bright yellow oil paint that's starting to dry out.
Yeah.
One of the features of this forest is these giant snags that are left over from the fires. Some of them are several stories tall. They're quite dead. And I understand that they will actually, they won't survive the logging process, even though they're not commercially valuable. They will be removed for the safety of the tree planters that follow the loggers. But these snags provide habitat for a whole range of plants and animals and birds.
Contribution of a dead tree to the forest extends for two-thirds of its life. So if you have a 600-year-old Douglas fir that dies, for 400 years it's vitally contributing to the ecosystem. They serve as great reservoirs of water. The dead wood takes up great amounts of water, and you can, in very dry summer weather, go to an old crumbly nurse log and reach right into the core of it and bring out punky wood that you can squeeze water out of. And that's one very important thing. There's all the little animals that live in them, all the little tree seedlings that start out from them. And the contribution of dead trees to creeks and fisheries are very important. That's something which has recently been realized.
It looks like it might land on a trail somehow.
Habitat where you have grizzlies and black bears cohabiting, the same habitat, the black bear cubs will be tucked up in the tops of those for safety against the grizzlies.
Like on top of the snags?
Yeah. A great big broken trunk of a tree will often have a dip in the top, and that one you could imagine that there'd be a little cavity in the top there, so the mama bear herds her cubs up and stashes them there when she goes out foraging, because the grizzlies,
are there grizzlies here?
No, there probably used to be. way back when, but the grizzlies have been pushed out of a lot of habitat.
We've walked about a half a kilometer down the Black Tower Trail, and now we've reached some green ribbons in the trees that show the park boundary. We can also see the falling boundary ribbons only a few meters outside of the park boundary. Not much of a buffer zone is being left to protect the provincial park.
Exciting to see what there
is. The dog's barking at something. What was your dog barking at there, Keith?
Little black bear just two trees east. You'll see him moving the site. There he is. See him in the distance?
Yeah, there he goes.
He's sharing the trail with us.
Moving away. There he goes. Right over a log there.
He's up on top of the big black bear. Yeah, just a little one. Just a young one.
A bear?
Right through those trees. You can see a black spot between those two trees.
Oh, yeah.
There he goes.
Oh, yeah.
There's just a young one.
Two bears.
You know, there's one around here with a big white... Actually, there's three. There's another one.
There's another one up in the tree.
Mother and two cubs problem.
I think I see one up a tree. Yes, there's a tree. Yeah. Up there, they're coming down the tree. It's a baby.
She's young for cubs, Rick.
Yeah, there's two cubs. The mother is really small.
She's very small.
The one I've seen has a big white spot on its chest. It's about a two-year-old. It's about the size of that mother.
She's not very big for one, eh? Small.
There they go, moving off into the woods in the park. So we've seen the black bears, the mother and two cubs.
Black-tailed deer. The Roosevelt elk have recently been reintroduced to the Sunshine Coast and into Powell River, and they've apparently spread into Roberts Creek now.
No kidding.
But they prefer open habitat to forest habitat. Allegedly, they were here originally. They were hunted out, and then they were reintroduced from Vancouver Island.
What about birds and amphibians?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a pileated woodpecker would be one of the more charismatic.
Yeah.
And it's a very important species because its holes are used by many types of secondary cavity nesters, including several species of owl. But when they remove all the dead trees, which they do in any type of cutting, then there's no homes for a pileated woodpecker or any of the other four species of woodpecker that live in this area.
Right.
There are five species of woodpecker and about 20 species of secondary cavity nesters, just in birds.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are mammals like squirrels and flying squirrels.
Flying squirrels.
And some types of salamander.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And big hawks? Do you have any goshawks out here?
There are a few, but they're not very common.
Nope.
But there are goshawks in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of smaller hawks like sharp-shinned hawks and Cooper's hawks.
So this is Crown land, and they're going to be selling it to be logged.
Selling
right?
The timber rights.
Oh, okay. And that's through BC Water and Land.
BC Timber Sales.
Okay.
BC Timber Sales is selling the rights to cut. And they haven't sold the rights to cut these five blocks yet.
They haven't put it up for sale yet.
But they will be putting it up for sale to the highest bidder.
Yeah.
And the bidder can choose to do whatever he wishes with the logs.
Pretty well, yeah. He has to pay what he bid, a stumpage. And he bids on above a base price. They set a base price, which is usually around $50 a cubic meter. And some bidders will bid an extra $2 a cubic meter or $5 a cubic meter. Some will bid the base price.
And not always the highest bidder wins, I hear.
Not necessarily. They have to be an approved bidder. And if they aren't currently approved, they won't be considered.
Right now it's Crown land, though.
It's all Crown land.
Yeah.
It'll stay Crown land, but it'll be stripped of any trees.
Yeah. But there's no public consultation process.
None whatsoever.
Mm. And CPEC can't approve logging in this area, specifically because there's no land resource management plan for this area. And until that plan is in place and accepted by the communities, there shouldn't be any logging.
Shouldn't be any sales of timber either if there's no plan.
Mm-hmm.
Because who knows what the community wants to do with the land. It's Crown land.
And it's also the Cooree Watershed, right? This
Absolutely.
Is part of the Sunshine Coast Regional District.
dozen creeks in 8 kilometers here.
And very close to the residential interface of the community of Roberts Creek, which is growing at a good rate, as is a lot of the other communities on the coast.
And the recreation opportunities in here are just fantastic. These mountain bike trails are just really well maintained. It looks like they're used a lot. We've heard some people on the other trails.
And as Paul said, you don't have to maintain a forest.
Mm-hmm. I saw horses too, right? I saw the sign from horses, so people are using as horse trails as well. Multi-purpose trails, hikers, bikers, horses.
What have we got here?
That's Fomitopsis pinicola, a conch that grows on conifers.
Uh-huh.
A major recycler of woody material. These things rot down the old wood, return it to the soil. Nice fungus-infested wood makes a wonderful moisture reservoir in the forest.
This is one of those shelf funguses with the creamy underside and the yellowish to brown top.
Yeah. At the right stage of life, they often have this orange or red fringe around the edge, and the inside is usually towards the attachment to the log is usually blacker than this one. This white pattern, there's a white sort of aura around
flower or ashes all around it.
That's the spores. It's discharging its spores, and they've settled on the ground all underneath it.
It's reproducing.
Oh, yeah. Billions and billions of spores, as Carl would have said, Carl Sagan.
We're looking at a tadpole of a tailed frog, which is a very ancient species of frog, which lives in fast-flowing streams. They're somewhat endangered by logging because they're very seldom, they're very susceptible to siltation of the streams. And also after logging, the stream sometimes dries up in the summer. As you can see, this is Clack Creek, which is one of the larger creeks around here. It seldom gets this low, but it's quite low now. There's not much water. When they log, after a rain, the water comes down very quickly. So you get a lot of siltation and extreme high flows in the creek. But then because there's no trees to hold the water on the hills, it dries up very quickly. So you go from flood to water starvation, which is very bad for these frogs. They're blue listed on the endangered species list, which means they're threatened and quite vulnerable.
And there's fresh clear cut right next to this creek.
Right next to it, that's right.
Paul Kruger and I are up on Robert's Flume Road. We're looking at a fresh clear cut, one of many planned for Mount Elphinstone this summer. We're seeing something different about the way this area is being logged. We're looking at large equipment, big, heavy, yellow machines. These are feller bunchers. These are machines that can cut and yard a tree all at once. It has a circular jaw that grabs the tree and a saw that cuts it off at the base and a long arm that allows the logger to stack the trees up. So we have trees stacked up 2 stories high along the road, huge cleared areas. And like I said, there are many, many more clear cuts being planned for this area, both on private land and on crown land on Mount Elphinstone. And this is massive industrial logging. The company that's doing the logging here is A&A Logging out of Vancouver. The equipment apparently is being contracted from FAB Logging Company in Half Moon Bay. So a few weeks ago, loggers from A&A Logging were coming up to start work on one of the blocks that had already been sold.
That's right.
And I understand that 2 people actually closed the road and some negotiations took place.
Yes, it's the only really effective way to stop logging once they want to start is to block the road, stand in front of the road and not let their equipment in. Or if they're trying to follow the trees, stand under the trees and not allow them to follow it. We did that a few weeks ago, and these people had already paid out a lot of money for this timber sale. So they said they couldn't afford not to log, which is a familiar story. Because they had already, this block had already, timber had been sold, we said we would, provided they would leave larger buffers on the creek, we would allow them to continue. on that basis. And we negotiated with them for quite a while, and we negotiated a 50-meter buffer rather than only about 20 meters, which they had left along the main creeks. And we negotiated a 20-meter buffer along a smaller creek and 10-meter buffers on other smaller creeks that had previously been totally ignored.
How did they block the road?
They just stood on the road and wouldn't let the trucks go in unless they wanted to run over somebody. And the loggers usually aren't willing to run over somebody.
What was their response this time?
Well, this time they said they would negotiate leaving considerably more buffers on the creeks if we allowed equipment to pass and cut the timber elsewhere, away from the creeks. So under those conditions, we allowed them to go ahead. However, on the upcoming blocks, which have not yet been put up for sale, we do not intend to negotiate. We intend to stop the cutting until there is an LRMP in place for this area. Mm-hmm. We will not allow logging to go on. And anyone considering bidding should be aware of that.
Is there any indication of when they're going to sell and log those blocks up there?
They have indicated early next year. But we can never be sure because they have been approved at this point. And once they're approved, they could put them up for sale at any time.
So they haven't yet been sold. They have been blocked out and they've been approved?
They have been flagged and approved for logging. Mm-hmm. And then once they're approved, BC Timber Sales takes over and sells the timber license.
Mm-hmm. And there's no public consultation in this process. There's no going into the communities and asking for
none
their advice.
None whatsoever.
There's no consulting with the First Nations on this.
None whatsoever.
Yeah.
Once it's been flagged, and this was flagged in February this year, then it's approved by the district manager for cutting. Once it's been approved, it's handed over to BC Timber Sales, and they can sell the timber rights at any time. So this has already been approved now. It was approved in June, so BC Timber Sales could sell it at any time. But they have told us it probably won't be until next year.
Are you putting out a call for supporters, asking people to help?
Yes. We expect to get hundreds of people supporting our blockade of this logging. And we will not allow any logging until we have an LRMP, which is a land and resource management plan for this area.
Hey, we heard from Rick O'Neill. He is a leading conservationist in Roberts Creek. He says the time to save Mount Elphinstone's forest is now. For more information on the campaign to save Elphinstone, send us an email. Our address is radioactivegreenmonkey@hotmail.com. Thanks to Rick, Paul Kruger, Debbie Osler, Keith McKenna, and others for sharing their viewpoints. I'm Jane Doe for Green Monkey Radio.